Continuing our study of Sefer Shmuel, Shmuel Beis, and we're up to Perek Yud Gimel, Chapter 13, which is, unfortunately, it's not going to be a pleasant chapter. What we had done is the previous story was the story of David and Bathsheba, and how that ended, and ended with David doing tshuva, but also with David being told that bad things are coming to his household. And the story of Perek Yud Gimel is one of those bad things that is coming to his household. Now, each person, specifically, we're going to be dealing with one perpetrator in Perek Yud Gimel. So he clearly made his own decisions, extremely poor and horrific decisions. But, you know, why is it happening in David's household right now? So it's very, first of all, in just reading the psukim and reading the flow, after the Navi said that bad things are coming to your household, it makes sense. And the rabbinic tradition has it that these were forms of punishment to David. Obviously, unfortunately, they're going to be victims, and it obviously raises questions, what did the victim do to deserve this? But that, is beyond the scope of anything that humans can understand. That's an age-old question. And, much like we asked the question, the child that was born from the union of David and Bathsheba, the first child that was born, that child died as a form of punishment. And none of us can understand that. And so there are going to be some questions that you're not going to understand in this parak. I imagine, I haven't been in middle school in a while, but I imagine, this might be one of the chapters that some teachers skip. Just because it's so horrific. Mm-hmm. It was after this, meaning after what had previously happened, which is the story of David and Bathsheba, which already is a link. We're linking to that story. How much time? It's not necessarily clear. Ula Avshalom ben David achos yafa ushma Tamar. To Avshalom, the son of David, there was a sister who was Yafa. She was beautiful. Ushma Tamar, and her name was Tamar. Vayehaveha Amnon ben David. And Amnon, the son of David, loved her. Which is a very strange way to introduce us to individuals. Because in this one pasuk, we mentioned what sounds to be three children of David, right? Avshalom, the son of David, has a sister. Presumably the sister of Avshalom, who's David's son, is David's daughter. And then we hear about Amnon ben David, who's another son. But it's definitely a very strange way to be presenting us these individuals, which raises some question that the commentators, even the Gemara, has about who is halachically related to whom. There is the ability for someone to be biologically related without halachically related, and that's when conversion is involved. That our tradition is that when someone converts, the Gemara tells us, ger shenis gayer kekatan shenol adami, that when a convert, man or woman, converts, they're like a child being born, and that they have no halachic relatives, so much so that min haTorah, on a biblical level, if an adult brother and sister would convert and become Jewish, on a biblical level, they would be allowed to get married. The Gemara says on a rabbinic level, it doesn't look good because people will come to say that, why do people convert to Judaism to kind of get around ways of doing immoral things? So midr Rabbanan, we don't allow it. But halachically, we don't view the person as having any relatives. So much of the Gemara says, what happens if you have someone who converts and before they get married and have any children of their own, which would be their new family, they pass away? Who owns their belongings? They have no yorshim. They have no people to inherit. Because the normal inheritance law is that if you don't have any children, then it goes up a generation. It'll go to your father. It'll go to brothers. It'll go up. But there's no up. A gershon is gayer who has not built their own family. They're related to no one.
Is that why some people who are adopted don't sit shiva for a parent?
So halachically, they don't have to sit shiva. There are constructs within the halacha of opting in to shiva, and there are even There used to be some practices of people sitting Shiva if one of the people they were sitting Shiva for were sitting Shiva. So that if my father was sitting Shiva for one of his seven close relatives, let's say his father, there used to be a practice of a son adopting to sit Shiva along with his father for his father's relatives.
His grandfather.
Right. So we no longer do that.
Yeah.
But there is a halachic construct that an adoptive child could sit Shiva and it would be appropriate. But the obligation would not be there because there's no, when it comes to an adoptive child, you get into a whole slew of right? Can an adoptive father, can he be alone with his adoptive daughter? Can he touch his adopted daughter? It's not, right? It's something that's obviously hard to deal with when it happens.
He adopted the daughter.
Right, but there's no familial relationship. So while he's taking care of her as a daughter, he can't, on a halakhic level, he can't necessarily give her a hug and a kiss when she's at a certain age. Which, you know, there's, again, you're not related. A small child.
So they can't change that?
No, but if it's
like by the Rabbanon or something?
You can't make biology is biology.
You can't adopt.
Biology is biology. But so let's swing it back to here. You may be in fulfillment to some degree of the mitzvah of Peru or Revu. The mitzvah of Peru or Revu is to have children. And up until the time that the Torah was given, the mitzvah was for all people, Jews, non-Jews. Here's the world. Peru or Revu, umelu es aretz. Have children and populate the world.
When the
Torah was given, the mitzvah of Peru or Revu changed. It became only, seemed to be enough Gentiles in the world that they didn't need any. God didn't need any more with a commandment. They would, right? China's working on its own without a commandment. And so the mitzvah of Peru Revu changed to raise children with a Jewish education and giving them a Jewish education. So if someone adopts a child and gives them a Jewish education, that may very well be to some degree a fulfillment of Peru Revu, because here you are, you took a child who would not have had an education and you gave them, you know, the best Jewish education that money can buy, and the home education, which we know is just as important. But there's you can't create biology. Again, it's a tremendous chesed. It's a tremendous chesed. It's a beautiful thing, and then we need it in the world to survive, because they're unfortunately children without parents, and they're parents without children, and when those two can meet together. You know, I imagine it's the greatest chesed in the world, and their portion in Olam Haba is larger than anything I can imagine. But we can't, like within many areas in halacha, we can't create biology. Surrogacy is different, and we could have I've given a shear, but let's get back to here. Why are we mentioning this? Because we meet this, we're in Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Aleph. You didn't miss much.
Okay.
we're introduced to Tamar, and she's defined that she is Avshalom's sister. She's defined as being Avshalom's sister and not David's daughter.
Right.
Which is strange, because Avshalom is being defined as being from David, and Amnon is being defined as being from David. So there's the mainstream approach is that when David was in battle previously, he took a woman whose name was Ma'acha, the mother of Avshalom and the mother of Tamar, but he took her in the form of an Eishes Yefas Toar. Parshas Kisetze begins with the parsha of Eishes, the category of Eishes Yefas Toar, that in the heat of battle, a soldier can take even a Gentile woman. He can be with her once intimately according to the Torah, and then he has to keep her for a month and kind of let her mourn the loss of her, you know, society. And then if he wants to marry her, he has to marry her. You know, he has to convert her. It has to be done. Everything has to be done kedasu kedin according to law. The union between David and this non-Jewish woman, which was sanctioned by the Torah under the umbrella of Eishes Yefas Toar, that produced Tamar. So later on, when Tamar's mother converted and Tamar was born, they each had the status of being converts. And so David married Ma'acha, and that marriage produced the child of Avshalom. And Avshalom was born from David, who was Jewish, and his mother Ma'acha, who is now a Ger Tzedek, or Gioras Tzedekas, however I'm supposed to say that. And therefore, Avshalom's Jewish, born from a Jewish mother. Ma'acha is Jewish because she converted. Tamar is Jewish because she was born in, you know, and was converted as a child. But halachically, she's not related to anybody in David's family, including Amnon, which is going to be a crucial thing for us to be realizing, that she was not related to Amnon, according to this mainstream approach. And she wasn't even related to Avshalom on a halachic level. However, she's still going to be referred to as Achos, right, as his sister, because biologically she was his sister. So on a social level, she was being brought up in the house like one of David's children. And because she was biologically related to Avshalom, especially you have to think about, you know, the complexity of David's household in terms of how many children came from how many different wives, you have to imagine that usually, I guess around the dinner table, usually you probably would sit with, you know, your mother. Everyone's David's child, but how do you associate yourself? You're almost going back a little bit to the time of Yaakov having four wives. It's usually doesn't work out well when there are multiple wives.
And everyone living together.
Everyone living together. And the psukim here are going to hint to, because here we're already dealing with what seems to be adults at this stage.
Right.
They definitely had separate quarters, but you have to imagine it's in some type of palace complex where they have separate quarters, but it's somehow interconnected, that the common areas or the hallways or something of that nature, and then there are separate quarters. So Tamar is identified, as we'll see both in the beginning of the story as well as the end of the story, as being Avshalom's sister, because he kind of had, even though the way we just explained that he was the younger brother, because she was born before her mother converted and he's born afterwards, he played the role of bigger brother, stronger brother, protective brother. Then the pasuk tells us, "Vayehavea Amnon ben David," that Amnon, the son of David, loved her, which is
Amnon's mother.
So Amnon's mother, we go back.
Was it all right? It wasn't.
It wasn't the same woman.
Okay.
Amnon and Avshalom were born from different mothers. The Amnon was David's bechor. His mother's name was Ahinoam, and Avshalom was David's third son, who was introduced to us as Ben Ma'acha Bas Talmi Melech Geshur, the son of Ma'acha, who was the daughter of a foreign king, which, you know, that backs up our story.
So not just like even like someone from the battlefield,
correct.
Went to the king and took the daughter, willingly, probably.
Probably not exactly. And, you know, maybe that's some type of military tactic.
Uh-huh. Do we know of other leaders who do the same thing, or we don't have that kind of knowledge?
And that much I don't know. There definitely, I mean, in the time of Shlomo HaMelech, there definitely seems to be some type of vision of political alliance because of a marriage to a foreign, a foreign woman.
But that one was assumed was arranged versus
right.
battle. It's makes
Correct.
I mean, maybe it wasn't violent, but you make it sound based on it being
the middle of battle. Torah, it sounds pretty violent.
Mm-hmm.
The relationship between Avshalom and Amnon, they were half brothers. They shared a father in David. The pasuk tells us that Amnon loved her, which is already. I mean, obviously, we're going to read pasuk Beis right away, but it's a one directional. It's a one direction that Amnon has feelings for Tamar, and it's strange to use that word ahava, because if anything, as we see as the story develops, it doesn't seem to be. It's definitely not romantic love. Mm-hmm. It's more of a lusting love, as we're going to describe in the next pasuk. According to the mainstream approach, that they're not related. So he had his eyes on her. He lusted after someone who was growing up in his house, you know, kind of like a stepsister in a sense. Meaning that they weren't related, but they're growing up in the same house. So it's a little perhaps it's a little strange that he would be attracted to her, but it's not the same thing as being attracted to a half-sister. Now, there are some other approaches who, you know, it's not such a far jump when we see the level of morality that Amnon had. There are some other approaches that say, no, the same backup, meaning the relationship between Avshalom and Tamar, you cannot deny it, and Tamar's mother was Ma'acha and all of that, but some explain that she was actually born after David had already converted his wife, Ma'acha. Therefore, she was fully Jewish. She was fully Avshalom's sister, and she was Amnon's half-sister. And he, as a depraved individual, he was attracted to his half-sister. Now, again, you know, how the fact that normal people are not attracted to their siblings, does it work the same way when your father has, you know, so many wives and there's so many half-siblings? Again, I'm not a psychologist now, and I don't know how to play psychologist for ancient biblical Israel. Pasuk Beis.
Can I just ask one question?
Sure.
I know that was a question. Why do they have to go like upside down and backwards to say that the daughter, Tamar, was, you know, why can't they just say that the mother of Tamar, like, had this Tamar before she married David? So they weren't related at all. That's like so much easier.
That would have cut out 10 minutes of my share.
Right. But I'm just saying, like, is there anything anywhere that makes it to be so convoluted? I mean, David has married women that are married before.
Right.
So does it say wasn't married before?
What's...
Like, to me, it's a no-brainer. She came with a child to the marriage, or she was pregnant.
So the perspective of the Tanakh, which I don't have such a large view of, seems to be extremely focused on the male children and not the female children of David.
Right.
Because in Perek Gimel, for every wife we're introduced to, we hear about a male child, at least one, that was produced from that union. And we don't hear about in the individual girls that are born to David. And, you know, you have to be doing, at least in Perek Gimel, you have to be doing some type of math that if David's having six wives, it's got to be some girls in there. Mm-hmm. Now, you'd also say there should be multiple boys. There are probably multiple boys in there, too. Why are we hearing specifically about specific names? We don't know. But so there doesn't seem to be a construct for introducing us to David's daughters. So once that exists, perhaps we're going to see that Avshalom takes up the case of Tamar in a very strong way. So it could be in the opening pasuk of this story, the Tanakh wants to show us the connection between Avshalom and Tamar. That if Tamar is going to be hurt, the one who's going to come to her defense naturally is going to be Avshalom. And we know that already off the bat. Like, if you had to guess who would protect Tamar, already from Pasuk Aleph, you would guess that it's Avshalom. And had we been introduced in a more of a direct way, we might not see that.
So, in other words, they want Avshalom
to be united. Right. To be united. I mean, to be united either just because they shared biological parents, and therefore you have to imagine, even though, right, this halacha about that post-conversion, the, you know, brothers and sisters are still going to act like brothers and sisters. You know, they're going to, you know, a family that converts all together, so none of them are related to anyone anymore on a halachic level. But biologically, they're still related, and they're still living in the same house, and they're still going on the same family vacations. You know, so there's that bond. So they clearly have that bond. Pasuk Beis. Vayetzer la'amnon. Amnon, his yetzer, his desires, he desired lehis and lehis chalos. His desires were making him sick. Ba'avur Tamar achoso, on account of Tamar, his sister, right? So here it's being called his sister. Either that's just based on the fact that she's growing up in the house and treated like a sister, so the Tanakh is even willing to call, or the minority approach that she was an actual half-sister. He had such a desire, partially because ki besulahi, she was a virgin. Vayipalei be'inei Amnon lasos la'mu'uma. It seemed to be a wonder or impossible for Amnon to do anything to her, to kind of act on his feelings. It's a very the word vayetzer, even though it has the word like yetzer, like a desire, it's more from the word tsara, like distress and worry. The lust had taken over him. You know, we would say that, you know, there's healthy attraction. This was unhealthy attraction. The extent that it was totally taking over his being, and to the extent that he was becoming sick, we'll see a hint to it in another pasuk. But he wasn't sleeping. Mm-hmm. He wasn't sleeping at night because his mind was preoccupied with thoughts about Tamar, and therefore, if you don't sleep at night, then you're, you know, we all know how important sleep is. And once a person doesn't sleep, they actually, it physically takes a toll on a person. It says that Vayipalei Beinei Amnon, that it's kind of like a wonder in his eyes to do something about it. One of the reasons it says she was a basula. What does it mean that she's a basula? So number one is he could be more attracted to her because she's a basula. Now, you would also say that that's rather strange. In a hopefully in David's household, every unmarried girl is a basula. That would be the normal approach in a nice Jewish home, would be that the girls are not sexually active. So does it mean that he's attracted to her, and therefore if she wasn't, it would probably mean that she's married, which would add a whole level of if this couldn't be more complicated. A further level, but ki basula he, it may be a reference to the fact that because she was a basula, in David's household, the girls who were not married yet were very modest, and they weren't out and about often enough, and so he didn't even have opportunities to see her enough, and so even just casually seeing her and being in her presence, which, you know, maybe that would tickle his fancy a little bit, that he would at least be able to see her. That so it was, you know, absence makes the heart grow fonder. It seems in this case, absence made the desire, you know, go on steroids and totally take over him. And he feels that also because she's secluded, that he has no way to even kind of get to her. Pasuk Gimel. Ula Amnon Rea. Amnon had a friend. Ushmo Yonadav ben Shim'a Achi David. His name was Yonadav, the son of Shima, the brother of David. So, if you're right, Shima and David are brothers. So that makes Yonadav and Amnon cousins. The Yonadav ish chacham me'od. Yonadav was very wise. He was extremely wise, which Chazal understand in a very negative way. And Rashi even says, Rashi just says one word on the phrase ish chacham. L'rasha'a, for evilness. So he was wise, but he was wise, right? Some of the biggest, you know, villains in history have been masterminds. They're horrible masterminds. There is a way to kind of play Yonadav to be not so vicious, in a sense that, you know, we're going to see that Yonadav is the mastermind for this plan that's really horrible. The question is, perhaps you could right? Why would, if Yonadav is a relative of David, so if he's, why would he want to cause such a ruckus in the household? Now, I have a question that I don't have an answer to. Is this is like the first relative we hear from David. Besides Yoav and Yoav's brother, who were always fighting with David when he was with his, you know, with his men, as far as we know, David's whole family, the Medrash had told us that David's whole family was wiped out. Mm-hmm. That he had deposited his family, his siblings, his parents by the king of Moab, thinking that the original, you know, family connection with great-grandmother Rus and Moab would, you know, they'd give him safe passage while Shaul was running after him. And then after David leaves, unfortunately, the Medrash explains it was off with their head, and the way the Medrash explained it is that only one relative survived, kind of patterned after what happened to David in the city of Nov, that David going to Nov and asking for food caused punishment to come to the city of Nov, where all the Kohanim in Nov were killed except for one, so it kind of paralleled that. So who is this? Where did this Yonadav come from? It's like he comes out of left field. I don't have an answer. I asked my wife. She didn't have an answer. So you're there for further homework assignments to figure out where has Yonadav been from the time that David was running away until now. We don't seem to know much about him. But he's introduced as a nephew, and that he's very wise. Pasuk Dalet. Vayomer lo, Yonadav said to cousin Amnon, Madua ata kacha. Why are you so dal? Dal usually means poor. Why do you look poor? Why do you look down? Ben Hamelech, Baboka Roker, you are a Ben Hamelech. Each morning you seem to be down, right? Which the assumption is that when you're a prince, life is good. Breakfast is good. Breakfast, you get to wake up late because you're not going to work. You get to have, the royal breakfast. Halo Tagidli, will you not tell me? So apparently they had, right, he was called a Rea. Usually the a Rea is, if anything, a Rea is sometimes more than a Chaver. A Chaver is kind of a friend. A Rea, we've referred to Rea, Rea Mahuvim. Rea is like a dear friend. So Amnon opens up, Vayomala Amnon. Amnon says back to his cousin Yonadav, his dear friend, Es Tamar, Achos Avshalom, Achi, Ani Ohev. Tamar, who's the sister of Avshalom, my brother, I love. There are some of Farshim that point out that we'll see later. Avshalom did have a daughter named Tamar. It's totally separate, and try not to get confused by that. So maybe it tries to spell it out that he's talking specifically about Avshalom's sister. But again, it just might be that the two, Tamar and Avshalom were always together as brother and sister. So that's how she's described. Again, Ani Ohev, I love, which it could very well be that there's no other, I'm not such a, no, I don't, what other word? Maybe you would like say like Ani Choshek, that I kind of yearn for, or I have this desire for, because usually we usually feel good towards the word Ahava. And here it's very, but this is definitely, it's only in one direction. So that's his problem. He says, I have great feelings for Tamar.
He refers to Avshalom as his brother, but not, and Tamar as Avshalom's sister.
Correct, which may be a hinting towards what we're saying, that it makes good sense to say that halachically he's not related to Tamar. Because of how she came to be. Why is she still called Avshalom's sister? She's still called Avshalom's sister because of the society, that's how the social setting, meaning she grew up playing, she was playmates with Avshalom. So this Yonadav is extremely smart. Pasukei. Vayomer lo Yonadav. So Yonadav says to Amnon the plan. Shechav al mishkavcha v'hischal. You should lie in your bed and be sick. By saying you should be sick means play sick. Uva avicha lerosecha, and naturally, if word gets around in the palace that you're sick, your father, meaning David, will come to see you. V'yamarte elav, and you should say the following thing when he comes to visit you. You should make the following request. Tavo no tamar achosi v'savreni lechem. Please have my sister Tamar come, v'savreni lechem, and serve me food. V'asa le'enai es ha-birya, she will make before me the birya, which is like, gets translated as a achila muetes, like a kind of a small meal. L'man asher eres, so that I'll see her performing the meal, making the meal, v'achalti miyada, and I'll eat from her hand. It seems to be innocent, in a sense, and David would buy it, because the fact that he's picking Tamar sounds random. What he's asking is not such a crazy request. He's sick, he can't make his own food, and he wants food to be made for him. But he wants food to be made for him in his presence, which the Mefarshim explain have at least a natural way to be explained, that sometimes when people are sick, they have no appetite. If they have no appetite, they need to kind of awaken their appetite. Perhaps one of the ways that your appetites awaken is if you actually watch the food being prepared. You begin to smell the food. You can see the food from a distance before it's on your plate. And so he's selling that to David, saying, right now, right, this is the plan. He's going to be lying there sick, saying, I can't eat anything. Have Tamar come, she'll make the food. Hopefully, if she makes the food and it's a birya, it's something that's kind of a light meal, it's not heavy, that will, l'man asher ere, so I'll see it, ve'achalti miyada, I will eat. And it seems to be simple. Now, there is a way to explain Yonadav as saying that that should be the plan, and that's the end of the plan. Meaning, you have these feelings for, Yonadav could have been telling Amnon, you have these feelings for Tamar. There's no real way for you to act on your feelings. Have her come and be in your presence, cook food for you, and maybe that'll calm you down. Maybe that'll just see her and just to be in her presence, maybe that's all you need. Because he does not give any further advice. Amnon takes the plan and goes horrific with it. So the question is, did Yonadav imply that or did he not? So that obviously there are some who are very critical of Yonadav and some who are less. Pasuk Vav. Vayishkav Amnon vayischal, so Amnon lied down in bed, vayischal, and he feigned illness. Vayovo amelech l'roso, like clockwork, right? Again, there could have been a little bit of time here, it could have been a day or two. Vayovo amelech l'roso, the king comes to see him. Vayomner Amnon el amelech. So Amnon says to the king, Tavono Tamar achosi, please allow for, arrange for Tamar, my sister, to come. Vatalabeib le'inai shtei levivot. She will prepare for me levivot. Levivot are some type of dumpling. Rashi explains, you take flour and you put the flour in boiling water first and then you fry it afterwards. So it's some type of dumpling. Anyone translate it differently? Artscroll says dumpling. 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 Jill, how's your translation?
A paste of flour.
Okay. So here he actually makes a request for something specific. Ve'evra miyada, and I will eat this light food miyada from her hand. Again, David is not suspicious of anything. Pasuk Zayin. Vayishlach David al Tamar habayis alemor. So David sent for Tamar at the house, saying as follows. L'china beis Amnon achich. Go to the house of Amnon, your brother. Which already sounds like he has an individual, you know, he has his own quarters. Again, what's the setup of the palace? I don't know. And I wonder, you know, I don't know if any of the archaeological digs in Ir David, if they've figured out, you know, the layout of the palace, whose room was whose or how it was. It'd definitely be fascinating to know. So he says, go to the house of Amnon, right? Whether it's a separate structure or it's just a kind of private quarters within the greater palace. Va'asilo habirya, and make for him a light meal. And she's not suspicious at all. No one is suspicious. Pasuches. Vatelech Tamar beis Amnon achia. So Tamar went to the household of Amnon, her brother. V'hu shochev, and he was lying down. Vatikachas abatzeik, she took the dough. Vatalash, and she kneaded the dough. Vatalabeib le'inav, and she was preparing these dumplings le'inav in front of his eyes. Vatavashel etzalavivos, and now she cooked it. So she's doing everything that's normal. Pasuk Tes. Vatikach es hamashreis, and she took the pan, the machavas, as Monsieur Sion defines mashreis. Has within the word mashreis, it has mishares, means to serve. You know, you could serve a, you could be a servant of someone, a mishares of someone else. So here it's a noun, not a verb. She took the serving plate, batitzok lefanav, and she began to pour it in front of him. Vayimain le'achol. But he refused. He refused to eat. He refused to eat. Which you would say still perhaps seems natural. He wasn't feeling well. He's saying that he has. I mean, from her perspective, he's saying he has no appetite. So even if she prepared the food, you know, sometimes you prepare food for someone who's not well, and they still don't want to eat. Vayomer Amnon. And Amnon said, "Hotziu kol ish me'alai. Remove everyone from here." From which makes it sound like there were more people, some more servants, attendants of his. Vayetzu kol ish me'alav, everyone went away except for Tamar. Which, as we're reading the story, we would probably say this is the first suspicious thing. But we can't expect Tamar to think ill of Amnon. Number one, she has no reason to think ill of Amnon. Number two, right now he's presenting himself as being sick, and so there's no reason for her to be suspicious. Pasuk Yud. Vayomer Amnon el Tamar. Amnon said to Tamar, "Havi habiria hacheder. Bring the light meal that you just prepared hacheder into, perhaps what we would say an inner room. Hacheder just means the room, so it means they had to be located in a room. And now he's saying, bring it into the room, some type of inner room. The evrim yadech, and I'll be able to eat from your hand. Vatikach Tamar es alivivos asher asa. So she took these dumplings that she made. And she brought it into the inner room. Unfortunately, what he's about to do to her, it makes sense in his mind that he wants to A, have no witnesses and have everyone out of the room, and B, go into a further room in the back. It'll be more private, and she'll be further away from anybody hearing anything. Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vategesh elav le'echol. She approached him. She approached him for him to eat, which is exactly what they said, right? Exactly what he said should happen. Vayachazek ba, and he grabbed hold of her. Physically, for the first time, he touched her and grabbed her. Seems to, usually chazek is in a forceful type of manner. Vayomer la, and he said to her, "Boi shechvi imi achosi, come and lie with me, sexually, my sister." And so he's being forceful, but he's making a proposition. So he's giving her, at least initially, he's giving her the ability to consent. Obviously, unfortunately, we're going to see that he doesn't really care about her lack of consent. But he initially invites her to give her consent, to be with her, to lie with her, which, you know, this is now, obviously, you know, she realizes that this is no longer normal, and she's in distress. What does she respond in Pasuk Yud Beis? Vatomer lo, she says to him, "Al achi, please, or no, my brother, al ta'aneni, do not cause me pain. Do not afflict me." Aneni from the word inui. Don't afflict me. Ki lo yasachen bi Yisrael. This is not done. This is not done in Yisrael. This is not a Jewish thing, right? Rape is not a Jewish thing. This is not done. Al ta'aseh es hanivala hazos. Do not do this disgusting thing. So her first line of thinking is to try and make a moral argument. Mm-hmm. To try and make a moral argument saying that this is just wrong and you shouldn't do a wrong thing, right? This echoes what Avigail said to David. When David was going to wipe out Nabal and the whole household over there because he was disrespectful to David. And Avigail turned to him and basically said, this is not done. She made a moral argument. David heeded that moral argument. So the first thing she says is that this is not done. Don't do this disgusting thing. Then she continues. Pasuk Yud Gimel. Va'ani Ana olich escher pasi. And then she says, and I, ana olich, where would I go escher pasi with my disgrace or with my shame? Meaning, let's say we go through with this, right? And even if I consent, or if you force me into this, where do I go from here? I will be damaged goods. I will be either a woman who was raped, or a woman who had, you know, premarital relationships with someone from my own family, whether it's biological, whether it's not. You're going to ruin my life. So that's her second argument. She's trying to beseech him that either this is morally wrong, just the general idea, or just think about me for a minute. Where do I go from here? And then she adds, it's hard to say, you know, we don't want to see any silver lining. It's not a silver lining, but she's a pretty brilliant woman. The fact that she's coming up with this on the spot, a multi-layered argument. V'ata, she says, and you, tiyeh ka'achad ha-nevalim b'Yisrael, you're going to be one of the nevalim. You're going to be one of the people who do disgusting acts. So she's saying, almost, you want to forget about this being morally wrong. You want to forget about this being something that's going to ruin my life. You're basically going to be stamping your own life as being a deplorable individual. Right now, you and I know who the next king of Israel is going to be. Who's the next king of Israel? Shlomo. Why do we know that? Because we know Malachim. And we know the Midrashim about what David tells Bathsheba and all things like that. They don't know that. It has not been announced. There is an oldest son of David. Who is the oldest son of David? Amnon. Mm-hmm. Amnon is the crown prince. She's basically saying, what are your, right? If David has X number of sons, and the first son is a rapist, probably not going to be the one who's chosen to be king. So you're going to ruin your own reputation. And she goes one step further, with a kind of a different route by saying, Va'ata enel daber nala melech, speak to the king, ki lo yimna eni mimeka, he won't hold me back from you. Meaning, he'll let me marry you. If you speak to the king and go about this the right way, the king would listen, which is one of the main arguments to be made that she was not halachically related, because how could she say that to him? Mm-hmm. David would never allow it if it was an actual half-sister. So she's basically saying to him, if you want to be with me, let's do this the right way. Now, was she being sincere, or is this a stall tactic? You can go either way. Meaning, maybe she was being sincere in that she was... Obviously, this is all happening within seconds, but she's making a calculated move that it would be much better to at least be properly married to Amnon than for it to happen this way. Or she's just trying to stall by saying, listen, I'm going to make a good argument to you that if you go to Father David and explain your feelings for me, he'll arrange a wedding. Meanwhile, she has time to escape and deal with it that way. According to the approach that says that they were related, she may just be trying to throw a monkey wrench into his thinking by saying, you know, there's a very good chance that he's not thinking straight. We have to hope that he's not thinking straight, because he's doing something so wrong. So that maybe by playing with his mind and saying, go ask David permission, he might have to, I could ask David permission. Permission, he's not going to do the math that he's asking David to do, to according to the approach that we're related, he'd be asking for something that's totally wrong. So she makes all these arguments, and unfortunately he's not interested. Pasuk Yud Dalet, v'lo ava lishmoa bekola, he refused, he did not want to listen to her voice of reason, multi-layered voice of reason. V'yechazak mimena, he overpowered her. Vayana, and he pained her. Vayishkavosa, and he lay with her, which is saying that he raped her against her will. Vayichazak mimena, that he overpowered her. That may be a hint, and even in the next pasuk we have a rabbinic hint. She didn't go without a fight, and she was trying to fight back, v'va'e'achazak mimena, he overpowered her, that whatever resistance she was putting forward, he was stronger, and she wasn't able to succeed. And so unfortunately, times 1,000, Amnon rapes Tamar. Immediately after he finishes raping her, Pasuk Tesvav, Vayisnoea Amnon, Sina Gdola Ma'od. Amnon hates her. And it's like, if you didn't read these words, you wouldn't believe it. Amnon hates her. Sina Gdola, a great hatred, Ma'od. Very much so, a great hatred. And then the Tanakh says, Ki Gdola Hasina Asher Snea, the hatred that he felt toward her was greater, Me'ava Asher Aheva, from the love that he had for her. Vayomer la Amnon kumilechi. Amnon said to her, get up and go. Which it's clearly showing that his love for her was no love. It was a lust. And once he got the lust out of the way, then all of his feelings got out of the way. Perhaps he starts, it would probably be very powerful to read this parak with a group of psychologists. But the fact that he did something so wrong, so it could be he now has a moment of calm, he realizes what a wrong act he did, and he automatically views her in an extremely negative way because she is the physical reminder of the wrong that he did. Mm-hmm. So that hatred is really a hatred that he has towards himself, but he projects it to his victim, which is obviously, makes it worse. And he tells her to leave. He tells her to get out. The Pasuk Tazayin, Vatomer Lo, she says to him, Al Odos Hara Hagdola Hazos. Don't do this greater evil thing, Me'acheres Asher Asisa Imi L'Shalcheini, from this other thing that you did to me to send me away. It's worse to send me away. Now that you raped me, that raping me was bad. If you send me away now, that's even worse. Because we've already seen that she's a brilliant woman. She's doing math. She's saying right now, if I leave right now, perhaps based on her physical appearance, she will be branded as a rape victim for the rest of her life. And there's not such a future. She's basically saying, keep me here, with the intention of saying, let's make a go at this. I mean, she's willing to marry such a person in that setting, because that's going to be, it's hard for us to understand. That'll be a road to more normal life for her in that setting. So she's saying, or at least she's saying, don't send me now. Don't send me now when it's daytime and everyone's around. Don't do this to me. And this will be worse. In the sense that obviously it's not physically worse, but it's about her emotional health, and it's about what she's trying to think longer than just the next 5 minutes. The lo aval lishma Allah, and he had no desire to listen to her. He has no that sinna, that hatred that he feels for her. It means that there's no compassion. He feels nothing. He feels nothing towards her at all. This is actually the example that Pirkei Avos brings about an ahava shetluya bedavar, and a love that is dependent on something. So once that thing is no longer, the love is no longer. And the example given is the love that Amnon felt for Tamar. Amnon didn't feel a love for Tamar. He felt a lust for Tamar. The instance that his lust was taken care of, once that was taken care of, there was no need. The love dissipates. As opposed to a love that's not taluya badavar, right? A love that's not dependent on anything. So that's a love that can go, that's a love that can go on and on, right? If you marry someone for a reason, you marry someone for their money, and then the finances go down, so then the marriage could be over. Obviously, we're not talking about a strong relationship, and it's not a real level of love. Love should be unconditional. Love shouldn't be talui b'davar. But the pasuk says, "V'lo aval l'shmo Allah." He doesn't want to listen to her. Vayikra es na'aro misharso. He called his attendant, his nar. He called to him who I guess was outside the room. Maybe he has some type of way to ring a bell. Vayomer shelchu na, send now as zos me'alai chutzah. Send this. He wasn't even, right? Till now we've heard Amnon so many times say her name. Say Tamar, the sister of Avshalom. He refers to her by her name. He refers to her in a dignified and respectable manner. And now in the post-rape view of her, he says, send this from me, hachutza, send this out, unol hadelas acharei, and lock the door. Which is like such an image of total abandonment of his victim. And as she testified, by him doing that, he's actually going to be doing even worse to her. Pasuk Yud Ches, ve'aleh aksones pasim, she was wearing a aksones pasim, some type of woolen, fine wool garment. Kichin telbashna benos hamelech habesulos me'ilim, the daughters of the kings who were virgins would wear these types of cloaks. So some want to understand that maybe the fact that she's only wearing her ksonas pasim without also wearing me'ilim, he didn't even give her a chance to, she's covered, but she's not necessarily, she's going to look disheveled. Vayotze esam esharsa hachutz, and so his attendant takes her out. V'nal hadelas achareha, and he closes the door after her. And so she's perhaps she's not physically exposed, but she's being exposed as a victim. And at this point, she realizes that this is going to be publicly known within the palace, and it appears that she makes a decision to amplify. Once it's going to be known, she wants it really to be known. Because Pasuk Yud Tes says, "Vatikach Tamar Efer al Rosha," she took Efer, she took dust and put it on her head. "Uksenes Hapasim Asher Aleha Kara," and the clothing that she had, she tore, which is a sign of mourning. "Vatasim Yada al Rosha," she put her hand on her head. "Vatelech Haloch V'Zaka," and she went out in a stage while crying, zaka, calling out, screaming out. She put on this public display to show what had happened to her. Why she wants to do that is maybe she just wants to say that this can happen. She's trying to show others that this can happen. The Gemara says that this episode of Amnon and Tamar was the motivation for David and his Beis Din to enact the laws of Yichud. The laws of Yichud is that a man and a woman should not be secluded together to be alone. Because if they're secluded together and they're alone, something inappropriate could happen. It could be a consensual inappropriate thing could happen. It could be a horrific thing could happen. But if there's the ability to prevent that alone time, then at least there'd be a slight deterrent, perhaps, of this not happening again. And it clearly becomes known within, we're just going to read just a few more psukim just to tie it up. It becomes known within the palace. Because Pasuk Chaf, Vayomer Ela Avshalom Achia, Avshalom her brother says to her, Ha'iminon Achich Hayaimach, was Amnon. And the Mefarshim say this is even a derogatory way of referring to him. Aminon, your brother, was he with you? Was he with you, meaning in a sexual way? It's almost like he knows that. And she doesn't even respond. Maybe she nods her head. Va'ata achosi hacharishi achichu. Be silent now, my sister. He is your brother. Al tashisi es libech la davar hazeh. Do not concern your heart over this matter. Vateshev Tamar v'shomema beis Avshalom achia. And Tamar, she sat devastated in the household of Avshalom, her brother. Avshalom by no means is trying to silence her. in the sense of, I don't empathize with you. Avshalom, we're going to see, is quite the cunning individual. He's saying, me and you, we need to be silent now. Now the approach is going to be silence, and with an implication that in the future the approach won't be silence. So hopefully, the story's not going to get positive ever, but it's an important story to learn, and we'll continue Bez Hashem next time.